This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Stay sharp.
We're just bebopping right through a Sweet 16 weekend here. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. This is the first time you and I have been together in, what, 2 or 3 weeks, I guess, right?
It's been a couple weeks. You were in
sunshiny Florida.
I was.
How was that?
Good. I was in sunshiny Florida.
Was it sunshiny?
It got, the sun was shining, but there was one day where it was like, it was cold. Even for someone from the north, it was windy and cold. It's like, I did not come to Florida for this.
You went to Babson Park, though, I saw.
Went right by Babson Park. They're getting closer to building that Evan Sharpley statue.
The statue, is it? Just past, what, second base there?
That's right. And the backstory on that, we've talked about this before. Notre Dame, this was in 2007, Notre Dame baseball, of course, which Evan Sharpley played for, was down in the middle of Florida at a little school called Weber International. Babson Park is the speck of a town that Weber is located in. Beautiful setting. The outfield looks right into this small lake, and so it's just very scenic and really cool looking. But Weber International is an NAIA team, and Notre Dame found itself trailing by 4 in the 9th inning. And Evan Sharpley hit the biggest double in the history of Notre Dame. No.
That's right.
It was windy.
If
and
it would have gone as
weather.
Far as it was high, though.
That's right.
We wouldn't even have been talking about this. We would have been talking
exactly
about the
right.
legendary
would've
home
been
run.
Over the fence. Yes, it would have been a lot different story. But so it's a pop-up to second base, and it's by the time the 9th inning came around, the sky, I remember it. There were crazy clouds in the sky. It was at dusk, and there's this wind blowing and everything. So Evan hits it a mile high. There are two outs, though, and what, two men on, I think?
Yeah.
Which were the tying runs. And so Evan hits it a mile high by second base. The second baseman loses it. Evan legs out a double.
That's the thing is, the hustle.
That's right.
Got to second base.
You've got to give the guy credit for running the thing out, because what does everyone always talk about? Why don't guys run balls out and blah, blah. Evan legs it out. Even though it was popped up to second base, he ends up at second base. The tying run score, Notre Dame ends up winning in 10 innings.
For some reason,
the legend was born.
For some reason, though, they decided to pinch run for me.
I don't know why. What was Schrag thinking?
I don't know.
I mean, you made it to second base.
You're right.
Come on. Who ran for you? Do you remember?
No. Ryan Connolly, maybe? No. Might have been. No, I don't know.
I think Hinterkoffer was already in the game, wasn't
well,
he?
Well, yeah, we would have to go back. We would have to go back and look.
Yeah.
We will go back and look at some point.
We'll do that at some point. But so
we know my skills on finding obscure things in the archives here in Notre Dame.
That's right. So I was in that area a couple of weeks ago.
Snapped a picture.
And I did. My wife slowed down.
That was good.
Because we had driven past the sign a couple of times. It's a road sign directing toward Babcock Park. Weber International, and we had driven past it a couple times. I got to get a picture of that. So my
that
wife slowed
good.
Down, got a shot of it, and I saw the construction crews getting ready for the Evan Sharpley statue going up. It was good stuff. But, you know, you've got a little, every time I see you, you've got a little different fashion look going with the hair.
Well,
and the beard. You've kind of got almost a Pfluger thing going on.
I had to get a haircut. Yeah. It was getting really long. I hadn't had a haircut since before Christmas, so I was looking a little haggard.
Right.
And we're leaving for Italy soon, so I had to make sure I looked okay.
That's right. Is that in 1 week, 2 weeks?
1 week. Yeah, we're 1 week away.
So
we leave a week from tomorrow.
So you will not be here. Well, hold it. So you will be here next week.
Next Friday, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But it's the week after.
It'll be
that
during spring break that you will not be seeing my smiling. Unless I maybe make, well, I don't know about making a call from Italy. I could send some video updates.
All right, sounds good. Let me get through this sponsor list. We've got Darren Pritchett. He's going to join us in a little bit more than 10 minutes from Bridgeport, Connecticut, the site of the NCAA hockey tournament. He is up there with Notre Dame hockey, so we'll be hearing from Darren, get a preview of that game, which starts in 3 hours over on Z94.3. But the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley is brought to you by Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, trusted community service for over 40 years, by Lechleitner Door. They open all the right doors, residential, commercial, and agricultural. Call 295-6311, by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Together we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By Carmela's at McCree's. Order your Easter lamb cakes, Italian Easter bread, and pastries today. That sounds tasty. By Edward Jones, rather, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Terry Clark in South Bend or Matt Carroll in Mishawaka. And by Kurt Outdoor Living, make plans to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Kurt Outdoor Living.
Braden Ashdown. He's okay. A pitch runner for me.
He was a pretty fast guy. Outfielder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I told you I'd find it.
I'm glad
that
you
was
did.
Quick.
That's the good old internet. It never lets you down, right? Well,
sometimes.
Unless it's social media, I guess. Facebook. All right. Of course, we're also presented by Sharply Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234, or visit sharplytraining.com. And again, Notre Dame hockey taking on Michigan Tech, 3 o'clock this afternoon. Darren Pritchett's going to join us here in just a few minutes to talk about that live from Bridgeport. Notre Dame's offensive and defensive coordinators and the others, special teams coordinator and Mike Elston, the assistant head coach, they all talked to the media yesterday at Notre Dame. We'll hear from Clark Lee and Chip Long in a little bit. We'll also talk some, a lot of other football. Pro day yesterday.
Did you run the 40 yesterday?
I did not.
No.
Run, Sean, run.
That would have been good.
Yeah. My hamstrings now, man. It's like,
well, we asked the combine, remember, shirt on, shirt off. It was if you're going to wear the underoos or the compression pants.
Right. I said both.
Yeah.
And I also said shirt on.
And then type of cleats. And it was under 5, over 5.
Yep.
Yeah.
50 pounds.
Currently over 5.
50 pounds and 30 years ago, it was
under
a different
5
story.
For sure. Yeah.
Today, man. All right. Sweet 16 last night. What a run. The Fighting Sister Jeans of Loyola Chicago just keep on going.
You have the South bracket picked out perfectly, though, right?
Don't we all?
You had Kansas State and Loyola?
I'd like to know if anyone outside of the state of Kansas or the city of Chicago has anyone still left in that bracket. Because even Sister Jean.
You have a 9 and an 11 seed.
I know. For the first time ever, a 9 playing an 11. Which it is. And Loyola Chicago slipped out.
So unless Michigan wins and goes to the championship game, you're guaranteed either a 9 or an 11.
Yep.
So you have a 3, a 9, or 2 9s and an 11 left.
Yeah, because you've got Michigan now,
Florida
which is
State.
A 3 seed.
Right.
Playing, 9-seeded Florida State. And you've got a 9-seed Kansas State playing 11-seed Loyola Chicago. So let that sink in. And
it's crazy.
I said before this tournament that this felt like, just the way this season had gone, that this felt like we could have some, what do you call them, high seeds or low seeds? I always turn that around. Some,
I don't know.
Some high numbers.
Yes.
Some high number seeds getting to the Final Four. And now we've got a chance, if Florida State beats Michigan, we are guaranteed to have at least 2 9s, maybe an 11. Playing in the
Final
Four.
It started out in round one with Virginia losing. I mean, that was crazy.
Yep.
By 20 points.
Did you get to watch any of that game?
No.
That was
unbelievable.
That was awesome. And I kind of tuned in because I'm flipping around all over the place with 4 games going on at the same time. And so I flip over to that right as it's getting to halftime, tied at 21. And I mean, you see the 16 seeds hang around that long.
Yeah,
it's happened before. Even Penn was leading Kansas.
Right.
Early in that game.
But then the second half usually starts. And
yeah, Jayhawks pulled away. And that's what always happens in that 1-16 game. And I don't think, realistically, did we ever think we were going to see a 16 beat a 1? Did you?
No. No I chance. Didn't.
And just they hit 12 3-pointers, though. Virginia couldn't do anything. Virginia got knocked off their game. And That's why Kansas State is obviously here, because all Kansas State had to do, I mean, even just beating a 5 seed, they have beaten an 8 seed,
yep.
They have beaten a 16 seed, and they have beaten a 5 seed Kentucky. And everyone kind of went all in on Kentucky just because it's Kentucky. But there's a reason they were a 5 seed. They were on the bubble just like 3 or 4 mm-hmm. weeks ago, and then they got hot, but it ran out last night.
After watching the tournament so far, what are your thoughts now on Notre Dame?
I think it's a lot tougher to make a case for Notre Dame based on both the way one Syracuse has played. Now, that doesn't necessarily that doesn't necessarily mean that if Notre Dame hadn't had that opportunity, that maybe based on matchups and stuff, they wouldn't have
been
able to win.
That certainly was
a
surprise
games.
For me, though, the way Syracuse has played.
Yeah. I mean, but that happened a couple of years ago. They got all the way to the Final Four
right.
as a 10 seed, and there was all the they were on the bubble just like this year going in. But I think it's harder to make a case for Notre Dame because they did lose in the second round. They looked okay against Hampton.
Mm-hmm.
They had energy. They did what they were supposed to do against Hampton, but they just did not play well against Penn State.
I know this isn't
and it's the NIT, but
I know this isn't Sweet 16 talk. But do you think, looking now, and I don't think there's clarity yet on whether or not Bonzi's hurt again, would you have played him in the NIT? Because the talk mid-season, you know, after he had gotten hurt, was we're not going to rush him back. We might not even see him.
Right.
And I was on the fence the entire time. I didn't think he was going to play the whole year and was surprised that he did come back and play at the end of the year. But, you know, once it was NIT, I mean, if there's any concern, though, I mean, it still was, I mean, we had talked, it was eight weeks until he could even be on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And they stuck to that. But that's still like everything is perfect. Rehab
right.
is perfect. You know, it's a different feel. So I think that there was certainly some concern in my mind there, and was a little bit surprised that he played both games in the NIT. Really,
and I think the biggest thing was, one, you had to base it on how does Bonzi feel? How's he feeling? Is he feeling any pain? Because we kind of, whether it was here or on SportsBeat, we had the discussion. Do you play him because it mm-hmm. is the NIT? Because now you're not playing for anything. But you had to trust him and how he felt about a lot of it. To his credit, he's a competitor. He wanted to
he's
get out
say,
there.
He's going to say he'll play. Yeah.
But at the same time, so I asked him after the Hampton game when we had the media opportunity, when we went into the locker room, I asked him, how you feeling? And he said, I feel fine. I'm feeling no pain, no discomfort. I've got the screw in there, the titanium screw, but I feel fine. I haven't felt anything. And then, of course, that all changed when he came down a little bit awkwardly in the Penn State game. But then I asked him as well after that, when he's sitting there and he had to leave at the end of the third quarter, and considering the USC, and I posed it to him this way, considering the guy from USC, Metu, he decided not to play for his own draft stock, but he didn't have any injury concerns,
right.
The USC guy. He just decided he didn't want to take any chances. But I asked him, did you ever consider, was there any thought at all about not playing? And Bonzi said no.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it's easy to kind of go back now and say
that's
that.
True.
But at the same time, he was out for 8 weeks, and it is the NIT.
And, I mean, when we listen to Mike Bray talk on his radio show every week, it was the same thing. Like, you know, we've got to look at what's best for him
right.
for his future,
there
too.
There was some doubt whether or not they
right.
would.
And, you know, obviously now that you're in a little bit of a different situation, I mean, that's tough. I mean, a foot injury is not anything to mess around with
right.
when you're using your feet for everything when you're running up and down the court. So,
and then you had the report from Yahoo the other day saying that Bonzi had, in fact, broken it again. But then,
now we don't really know.
Later
right?
that afternoon, and Tom Noy was on SportsBeat with me a couple of nights ago in the second hour, and he'll be on again tonight. But Tom Noy happened to run into Bonzi at Purcell Pavilion. He was over there to do a women's basketball feature piece, and a good one at IndyInsider.com and the South Bend Tribune today. It's in there. But he runs into Bonzi Colson, and he sees him. He's on crutches and with a walking boot. But he asked him specifically, what's going on with your foot? Have you broken your foot? And Bonzi said, it is still not
determined
whether or not there's actually another break in there.
Hmm.
So hopefully, maybe it's just the increased activity kind of flared something up in there. Hopefully, maybe it's just inflammation or something, but they haven't even decided if it's broken right now.
Well, when you talk with Tom tonight, make sure you send him my way. We might have to give him a lesson, or he needs to take a class on how to use Twitter.
Uh-oh.
He, instead of just retweeting, he quotes the tweet and puts this with dot, dot, dots.
Right. Does when a lot
you,
of that.
When you easily could just retweet it, and it does the right. same thing.
This.
Yeah.
What about that?
Well, maybe if you mixed a few of those in there, too, or that, or and this. And
the other thing.
Yeah. Mix in a few of those to keep it interesting. Because you might be able to go to his timeline, and it might be this, dot, dot, dot.
Right.
This, dot, dot, dot. This, dot, dot, dot. Of things you could easily just retweet instead of quote and put that.
You said it, not me. It's 12:16, Sean and Sharply, Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT. The Sports Leader will take a timeout. When we come back, we go to Bridgeport, Connecticut, where the Notre Dame hockey team is prepping for its first-round NCAA tournament game against Michigan Tech. It's on Z94.3. Darren Pritchett is going to join us. Of course, he has the call this afternoon, so we'll do that next. John and Sharply, Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT. Are coming up on at 12:20 on 96.1 WSBT, the Sports Leader, Sean and Sharply, and the Leprechaun Lunch. We've got a little hockey going on later today, 3 o'clock, the NCAA tournament. Notre Dame takes on Michigan Tech in the first round of the tournament. Notre Dame is the overall number 2 seed. They're the number 1 seed in that 4-team regional. Of course, pregame at 2:45 on Z94.3 FM, Darren Pritchett has the call, and the voice of Notre Dame hockey joins us right now. It sounds like the festivities are getting ready to get started there at the hotel, huh, Darren?
Well, first, Sean and Sharp, good to be with you. Yeah, we're outside our hotel here in Trumbull, Connecticut. I guess the home of the World Series champions many, many years ago. So we got the band out front, and the players are going to walk out with the fight song playing here in just a little bit. Hop on the bus and get ready for some NCAA tournament hockey.
All right. How was dinner last night? We talked to you right before you were getting ready for a little dinner.
Man, I screwed up. Normally when we go out to eat, if you have a choice of salmon or steak. And the steak's normally very, very small. So I went conservative. I went with the salmon at East Coast. The steak was like the hugest chunk, a piece of steak you can imagine. So all of us that picked salmon were kicking ourselves in the backside for making a terrible choice. Otherwise, it was good.
A little more nutritious anyway, yeah. All right, well,
I guess.
Darren, after winning their first 13 Big Ten games in their first season of the Big Ten, the Irish kind of struggled through the second half of the schedule, but they bounced back last week by winning that Big Ten championship in the tournament. How important do you think that was for them as they gear up now for the NCAAs?
You know, Sean, I think it was important. I think after they clinched the Big Ten regular season crown with 5 games to go in the conference season, there was that human nature letdown. I don't want to get hurt. The tournament's around the corner. Maybe I back off a little bit. And we did not play very good hockey for the next couple of weeks. But they started to turn the corner the last weekend of the regular season, even though they lost to Michigan State. But they played very well against Penn State, won that semifinal. Against Ohio State, they played their best first period of the year in the Big Ten championship game. Second and third periods, they played too much on their heels, a little too conservative, and blew a 2-goal lead only to win it in overtime to win that Big Ten tournament crown and secure this number 2 overall seed. So I think, Sean, it was extremely important. We were just kind of playing up and down hockey, not playing consistent, not playing our game, but we found our game during the Big Ten tournament, which is hopefully a good omen going into the NCAA tournament.
Darren, I'm looking at the bracket here right now. You mentioned Notre Dame is the number 2 overall seed. They're number 1 seed here in the East. They've got Notre Dame, Providence, Clarkson, Michigan Tech. Outside of that, who are the real teams right now going into this bracket who are trending up? And if Notre Dame is to make a run, you think would give them some trouble?
You know, I can hear Evan saying something, but I could not hear it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Try it again, Evan.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
There we go. All right. So Notre Dame, you mentioned Notre Dame, number two overall seed, number one in the East, along with Providence, Clarkson, Michigan Tech. Who are a couple other teams right now kind of on the upward trend across the entire bracket? I got the bracket in front of me right now that could potentially make a run, and if Notre Dame does too, could give them some issues.
I don't know if it's a team on the rise, but they've been under the radar the whole year, and that's Ohio State. Even though we're 4-1 against them, I felt like they have been our best opponent of anybody we played this year, and that includes Denver, who might win the whole thing. Denver early in the year wasn't playing that great. Ohio State has played extremely well against us in five games. So I hate picking a number one seed, but no one talks about them. So I feel like they're a team on the rise, but they play a Princeton team in the first round that has two really good offensive lines, so they may not survive. In this first round format, anybody can beat anybody. I mean, Michigan Tech has a bunch of great wins this year. They've beaten Boston College. They held Minnesota State, the team that has the best offense in the country statistically, to 5 goals in 3 games in a playoff series. So, I mean, I could see Michigan Tech, who's been to 10 Frozen Fours. Now, they haven't won a game since the 80s when the format was a little different, but they're an older team. So all these older teams that are in our bracket are going to be a challenge for us because they will have 22, 23, 24-year-olds. Michigan Tech has a 25-year-old that we're going to be playing against today. And, you know, we're more of the 19 to 21-year-old team. So it's always a physical mismatch at times. And in terms of experience, you know, these teams sometimes have an advantage. And that's the equalizer in these type of games. The teams that are older and are a little more physically developed than our guys. But, you know, we're in pretty good shape. We're faster than these teams. So hopefully the speed can make a difference.
Darren, how tough is it to pick a bracket with this format, looking at the way this is set up? You know, normally you play a team, you've got a 2 or 3 game series. How hard is it to sit down and actually look at this and pick a winner here in the first round?
Sharp, it's extremely difficult. You're basically playing game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals every time you take the ice. In the NCAA tournament, one bad bounce can change everything. And let me just give you a quick example. My first year, when I took over toward the end of the year, we played Bemidji State. We were the number 2 overall seed, just like this year. And in the first period, Bemidji State just dumped the puck in our zone. The puck went off the inboard. It hit the goaltender, Jordan Pierce's skate, and went in the net. An absolute fluke. We kind of freaked out from there, lost our composure, and we lost 5-1. So the number 2 overall seed was done. Just like that. So it is extremely difficult to pick this. There's a lot of parity in college hockey. There's probably 25 teams that could win a first round game very, very easily. Only 16 make the tournament. So once you get in, you got a shot. And obviously, this is the missing jewel for the Irish. The only thing missing on the resume is winning a national championship.
Darren Pritchett, WSBT Sports Director and voice of the Fighting Irish hockey team, joining us from Connecticut, getting ready for the first round NCAA matchup over on Z94.3 at 3 this afternoon. And kind of along those lines, Darren, I saw you tweet yesterday about adjustments, and this is an early start time. One of the things you said, they've got to adjust to mostly empty arenas. How much do you think that could affect Notre Dame today?
It could affect any team, because I'm expecting, since Providence plays the second game, and they're one of the teams in this region like to draw a few fans to this arena in Bridgeport, you've got to produce your own energy early in the game. When we were in Toledo 5-6 years ago as the number one seed and we lost to St. Cloud State in the first round, there was probably 400 people in the building. And guys, it really stinks. These should be the most exciting games of the year, and actually they are the most least attended unless you play, for example, Allentown, Pennsylvania region. All the Penn State fans are going to be there. So there's going to be an atmosphere. Or in South Dakota, all the Minnesota teams can drive over. You know, unfortunately for us, we're so far away, we're not going to draw many fans other than parents. So it's going to be up to our team to produce our own energy early on in the game, because you will get nothing from the crowd today. And it's really unfortunate to me, guys. It's time to go the women's tournament way, where in the women's draw, the top 16 overall seeds host the first 2 rounds. I think it's time for the 4 number one seeds in the NCAA hockey tournament to host, so we have a built-in atmosphere. I mean, right now you probably hear the band playing as the players start to come out. There's just not going to be a lot of atmosphere today, and it's really unfortunate because this should be the most exciting game of the year.
Well, Now, at the same time, Providence and Clarkson are in the other game in Bridgeport, and they're playing at 6:30. Is that because of what you talked about? Because Providence is kind of in that area? I'm surprised that as the number one seed, Notre Dame's not playing the later game instead of the early game.
Well, I think it probably has to do with they want to get the number one seed all advantages possible. We have the best locker room. I actually have the only broadcast booth in Bridgeport. I mean, the ESPN booth next to me where Melrose and Butcher Grass will be calling is about 5 feet wide, so I don't know how they're going to fit in there. But all the other three teams just have a table sitting out on the concourse through the games from. So they try to get the number one seed all the advantage. So playing the early game, we will get 3-4 hours more of recovered time if we win this game in preparation for the game 6 o'clock tomorrow for a trip to the Frozen Four. So it's basically to give the top seed an advantage, a little more recovery time. And plus, I think they were looking for a game to put on ESPN2 in the afternoon away from the NCAA basketball tournament. So I think we're the only game that's on like the regular ESPN networks today on ESPN2.
Last question for you. Key to an Irish win today.
Well, like I mentioned a moment ago, creating your own energy early on in the game, getting the lead is huge in these NCAA tournament games. I hate to say that because we were down to Lowell in Minnesota last year and rallied to win both of those games to get to the Frozen Four. But we're a team built on goaltending, experience, blue line. We've got four defensemen who have played over 100 career games. So we want them to control the game. I mean, Michigan Tech's going to want to be physical, and they've got a couple of lines that are very effective. But I think a thing to watch in this game, Michigan Tech's defense four is more physical than good footwork. So with our speed, if we can get the puck behind those defensemen or put pressure on them, the Irish can get to the front of the net and maybe get some goals that way. I think that's how you beat this older, more physical Michigan Tech team, by using your speed. And again, if you get that early, it just takes off a lot of pressure. Get that lead after the first period. Notre Dame, when they score first this year, I believe they're 22-2, so that first goal always important in these tournament games.
All right, real good. Notre Dame taking on Michigan Tech, 3 o'clock this afternoon, 2:45 pregame with Darren, who's getting ready to get on the bus right now. NCAA tournament action, you'll hear it on our sister station, Z94.3.com. Have a good call, Darren. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. Good to hear from you. We'll see you soon.
All right, sounds good. Darren Pritchett with Notre Dame hockey. And you know something I saw recently? I saw this interview. Do you know who Taylor Kitsch is?
Yeah.
The guy from, he was Riggins on Friday Night Lights.
Oh, yeah.
And also in Lone Survivor. Apparently he grew up wanting to be a hockey player. He was like,
well,
really
he's got the hair.
It.
Yeah, got the hair for it, right?
Got really close, and then I think he had an injury or something and
interesting.
Went into acting late. Like Friday Night Lights was his first big thing. So
that worked out. Okay,
yeah, I think it worked out okay for him. You're right about that. All right. 12:31, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, you'll hear from Clark Lee as well as Chip Long, a couple of the Irish coordinators who spoke to the media yesterday after practice over at Notre Dame. We'll do that next. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharp Lee, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. And again, don't forget, Notre Dame hockey coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon on Z94.3 FM as the NCAA tournament begins. They will, if they win, they will play tomorrow. So two wins and you go to the Frozen Four. It's a lot different in the hockey tournament. There are a lot fewer Division I college hockey teams, so you start off basically
in the
Sweet 16. That's right. You just jump right in there. And that was an interesting question because of the fact that it is usually a series.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one and done now.
Yeah.
And it's a lot different. I think
the pressure
maybe,
is there.
Maybe teams feel that pressure.
I would assume so.
In the NCAA tournament. You would have to think so.
I mean, it'd be like in baseball playing. Well, it'd be like the wild card, I guess, at the end of the year. You got a one-game playoff.
Yeah. And it's the reverse situation for Notre Dame. They were the 4 seed last year. They beat the 1 seed
right.
In this game they're playing in right now and then ended up winning the next game as well to get to the Frozen Four. So now they've kind of got to fight that off. And I agree with what Darren's saying. I really wonder why they don't do on campus games like women's basketball.
Why not?
Does to get the crowds be, and especially they were in what, Vermont last year? No, New Hampshire. I get Vermont or New Hampshire, one of the two. And then now you're in Bridgeport this year, and I think Worcester, Massachusetts. It's one of the sites. So there are a lot of.
And I mean, I can get it like for the national championship game, maybe. Okay, let's pick which this one's at the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul.
Right, they play them in bigger NHL arenas.
But for the first couple of rounds, and maybe even the Frozen Four too. Why? I mean, how cool would it be to have it on a campus?
Yeah, I think the problem with that is they sell a lot of tickets for the Frozen Four in those big pro arenas. So,
for the Frozen Four, the championship, first two rounds, I think
it makes a lot of sense to do it. You let the number one seeds host. It's something, especially since it is a one and done situation. I think they've earned the right to have that, to be able to host those games and have it on their campus and have the home.
I'm with that
ice advantage. So, all right, let's talk a little. Football. Notre Dame spring practice kicked back into high gear.
They were off for a week, right?
Yeah, I know. And it's like they've jumped right back into it, especially since the coaches' clinic is this weekend, too. So you've got a lot of people, and we're going to get to watch a whole practice tomorrow. It'd be interesting to see what the content of that practice holds.
Normally with the coaches' clinic, it's a lot of drill work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason why the coaches are there. They want to see how the practice is structured, the type of drills that are going to be used.
Yep.
But it is a little more of an intimate type of setting where you're pretty close to the coaching staff, and you can hear verbiage, you can hear coaching points, those aspects, and they'll get after it and likely do a little bit of 11-on-11 and probably some 7-on-7, but I would expect it's going to be fairly vanilla as far as what they're actually running through when it comes to, you know, plays and whatnot. I know that's how we set it up when I played.
But I could guarantee you one thing. All eyes will be on the quarterbacks.
Oh, always. Always.
Brandon Wimbush, Ian Book, even Avery Davis, who is going to be doing a lot of different things this spring, including taking some handoffs at running back, which is
or lack of.
But Chip Long, the offensive coordinator, spoke to the media after yesterday's practice, and he was asked to give his assessment of what the quarterbacks have looked like so far this spring.
No, I mean, I see great improvement in both of them. You know, it's good to see young Avery out there finally getting reps with real team action instead of reading it off a card on scout team. But, you know, Brandon and Ian, you can see how their game's elevated from last year. They're just so much more comfortable in the offense. They can anticipate things, and guys are making plays for them. And when guys are making plays for you at quarterback, you're going to get more confident and believe in yourself a whole lot more. So it's good to see.
Young Avery out there as well. I mean, I got to see a little bit on Tuesday morning to get to go to yesterday's practice. There was full viewing, but you had to be part of the coaches' clinic. And a lot of different media members will, mostly like Eric Hansen was there. I think Tyler James and Mike Varell were there from the Tribune, those guys and the .coms and stuff. They'll get there. You can't necessarily talk a lot in detail about what you see, but you do get to see some things. So I've just got to see just a little bit, and there wasn't anything to speak of. Just got to see kind of what would you call it, that first where they move the chains?
Tempo period.
Right, they start off with some tempo to kind of get the blood flowing a little bit. They both looked all right.
How'd everybody look stretching?
Dynamic, I guess I should say.
Undefeated team based on their warm-up?
Absolutely.
All right. Hard to mess that one up, right?
Yep. So probably the more important question, though, that Eric Hansen asked Chip Long yesterday was about simulating game speed.
It's hard to do,
in practice. Yeah, because we saw a huge disconnect in Brandon Wimbush from what we saw in practice last spring and last fall compared to what we saw on game days, where he completed 49.5% of his passes, and that was a big issue, and that's something he's got to work on. So the question was posed to him, can you even come close to simulating in practice what a quarterback is going to see on game day? And here's Chip Long's answer.
You can't. I mean, try to, you know, right now, third down situations, a lot of pressure, you know, but you still can't simulate getting hit.
Right.
And that's hard as a young quarterback. You know, you usually have to take a year to understand how to play when you're getting hit, when things aren't going well. And that's what's exciting, to see in the growth in both those guys right now. And then, you know, spring game, trying to get them out in front of the fans. You still can't get an idea for the first time you take one in the chin and get up and have to do it again. So, you know, you talk about it and you keep challenging them, and they know. They see it. They feel it. And that's what's special about that position. And
yeah, you keep, I mean, it's so different. However, in my one of my spring game experiences, I was live. David Wolke and I believe were the only two quarterbacks that went live in all spring games on that day. We were live, and I hadn't been hit. It had almost been an entire year since I had been hit. So that was a little bit of a wake up call to finally.
Feel good?
No, it did not feel good. No, the safeties, they hit way harder in college than they did in high school. You know, I go try to take on a safety
flies in high school
at
right?
the next level, and it's like, oh, this dude has a little pop behind it. I got up, I was like, whoa, I don't think I'm going to do that again. I'll probably run out of bounds. But it is. It's so hard. You know, you can dial up pressures, and you know, I would assume that. You know, that's going to be what the coaching staff is going to look to try to do, is make them feel as uncomfortable as possible without having to take the hits. I mean, you know when you've been sacked in mm-hmm. practice, and usually the defense is kind enough to come up and give you a little tap. So
well, last year in the spring, and we saw it in the blue-gold game too, but if defenders win within like a 12-yard zone of Brandon Wimbush, they were blowing the whistle already. I mean,
not
you
a fan
can get
of that.
A little bit closer.
The other part of that, though, too, is, you know, Brandon's a very talented runner.
Mm-hmm.
And Ian's very athletic, too, and can extend plays. So when you whistle it dead that early, you even take away that element. Not that a defender is going to come up and, you know, decapitate a quarterback. But
that's also why we didn't have any clue what Wimbush was going to be.
No
as a
idea.
Runner, because we
Zero.
Never got to see
it.
It
was always blown early.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hope that the whistle, they're safe, you know, as far as trying to keep the quarterbacks healthy. But at the same time, You've got to ramp up the pressure as much as possible, whether that's through, you know, blitzes, whether that's through, you know, holding onto that whistle a little bit longer and educating the defenders on, okay, guys, these are our quarterbacks here.
Mm-hmm.
How can you make them still feel as uncomfortable as possible to give them a good look, you know, without having to actually go live?
Absolutely. All right. So, again, we'll get to see. Maybe we get to get a little more insight tomorrow on how Brandon Wimbush and how Ian Book look.
Well, you know,
a little bit more live setting.
We'll analyze and overanalyze and reanalyze, and you know, that's why we go, right? It's a topic that's, you know, based on what happened last year. There's a reason why that's at the forefront of everyone's minds, because if the offense is going to have the success that it could have, a lot of that is going to stem from consistency throwing the football. And right now, based on what we saw last year, that's a huge concern.
And when we think about the blue-gold game last year, because Book, especially statistically, he did outperform mm-hmm. Brandon Wimbush in the blue-gold game.
Yeah, but you got to remember, when I was a sophomore, I outperformed Brady Quinn. I wasn't the starting quarterback, so come
on. All right,
on.
Never mind. Never mind.
No, I get it. And, you know, I love the blue-gold game because it broke up the monotony of practice. It was more like a real game.
Uh-huh.
The energy, the competitiveness, having the fans and the crowd there was great. And sometimes you see, you know, a different side of players. Granted, the coaching staff, they want to see a level of consistency from the day one of spring practice that leads up to the spring game versus, you know, up and downs, peaks and valleys throughout practices, and then you ball out on game day. But there were, I mean, some guys were like that. And for those guys, if you couldn't turn the coaches' heads enough in practice, it was you were hoping you got an opportunity because you knew in the game you were going to be ready to perform.
What you still have over Brady Quinn is his beard game is nowhere near
that is true.
Your ballpark right
yeah.
now. That's you'll always have that.
I will always have that.
All right, let's talk a little defense.
It is getting a little gray. There's some speckles here of gray coming in. Yeah.
I can see a couple of little dots on top there too. Now
when I had the long hair before I got it cut, the longer it gets, the more it's pretty pronounced, the gray.
That's very true.
But they called my dad Silver Fox, so
you're preaching to the choir right now.
Silver Fox Jr. is around the corner here.
All right. Let's talk a little defense. Clark Lee, the new defensive coordinator, of course, took over for Mike Elko, who headed off to Texas A&M. Whose basketball team just got thrashed by Michigan last night, by the way. We didn't get a chance to touch much on that game. But that's another story for another day. But Clark Lee's got a different energy about him. He's out there, and he runs off the field. He runs off the field, and he was asked about just why he does that.
Anything we ask the players to do, I mean, obviously we're not capable of some things, but whatever, especially when it comes to energy output, yeah, we want to set the tone for it, and you just try to create a, you know, the level of competition even in how we exchange drills, you know. And so when they see us running, you know, they'll start running, they'll start racing me. And ultimately, I never win those races, but it's fun to do it anyway. So that's what that's about.
Do you ever have a lot of those kind of coaches when you were playing? Guys
I was fortunate. My two position coaches I had, Peter Voss and Ron Paulus, both in their own unique ways, were pretty high-energy guys, you know, to get us going. You know, Peter was a little more seasoned as a coach. You know, Ron, he brought a lot of energy to our meeting rooms. You know, had played the position at Notre Dame, so knew, you know, what to expect, how to handle things on the field, how to handle things off the field. But both those guys, you know, they each brought kind of within their own personality a high level of energy to our group, which, you know, which is needed. When it's a year-round sport that you're playing, and to continue to make each practice relevant, where there's a renewed focus and a renewed energy. But you know, it's a grind for those coaches too, and I give them a lot of credit for being able to bring that juice. But you know, it definitely helps. You know, the players look to that. They try to, you know, I think the coaches that are the best at doing that will get the most out of their players on a daily basis, because the players don't see it as forced. It's helpful on the days where maybe as a player you're down. Yeah, you're dragging.
Which was kind of what Tuesday.
Yeah, we're on week two or three here of camp, and it's, you know, this is it's long, it's tiring. So you have some of those guys, and you know, thinking back to my career, you know, a few guys that I think probably come to mind. You know, John Tenuta, I really like John quite a bit. He was kind of gruff in his approach, but him and I had...
Comes off that way in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but he... I really like... John and I got along really well, you know, he brought it often. Bernie Parmalee was another guy, always very happy, you know, very jovial, always a smile on his face. Would come and crack jokes with you, and you know, ask you how things were going. But you really enjoyed being around those types of staff members. I guess in comparison to guys that are a little more shut off or quiet.
Okay. Let's. I got one more for you, real quick. Just as far as Clark Lee's style, but one thing that catches your eye during practice is when they're doing these different drills, because that's a lot of what the spring is, drills and technique. And we saw it to the nth degree last year with Mike Elko with the installation of this completely new defense. But Clark Lee doesn't just give them a drill and say, do it. We do it because we do it. He will actually explain why they do the drill. So here is Clark Lee explaining why he explains why to the players at practice.
And I'm still young, right? So, like, I'm not thinking back that far when I think about when I was a player. But the coaching I responded to most, these are all smart guys. And, you know, the coaching I responded to most was not, you know, being browbeaten or having something shoved down my throat. It was being presented with how this is going to make you a better player. And I think when you do that, you create buy-in to it. And so you want the execution of the drill to be in a way that they know exactly how it's going to affect them on the field. And when they do that, their attention, their focus, their execution of the drill is higher. And that's where that comes from. I mean, I honestly, like, I try to coach these guys in a way that is respectful of again, their intelligence, and I know how desperately they want to be good. And so let me not just drill to drill. Let me show and explain exactly how this drill will affect them in the game.
That's great. I love it.
Love it.
I mean, that's how it should be done. You know, if you know the why, your buy-in is way higher.
Mm-hmm.
If it helps you improve and you know why it's going to help you improve on the field, there's a reason for this. You know, sometimes it's, all right, we're going to blow the whistle. We're going to try to get as many reps into this as we can. And you're standing there looking at your buddy like, what are we doing? What is even the point of this? And maybe there is a point, but if it's not relayed to you, and it has to be constantly relayed. Okay, guys, here's our drill. Here's how we're going to do it. Here are the coaching points. Here are our points of performance. And here's why it's going to help. Boom. All right, great.
Not just because
you've
I
already caught
so.
My attention.
Right.
So, and that was, we saw that, and I saw that specifically last year with Coach Lee, and really, you know, and Coach Elko too, was there was a different feel. It was more instruction, even though there was still, you know, time up on the clock on, hey guys, there is a sense of urgency here, but there is purpose, there is structure. And when you have that, you know, performance will increase because there's more buy-in from the players.
All right, it's coming up on 12:52. Got to take a timeout. When we come back, we will wrap things up. There's something I want to ask you about. There's another new spring football league that is going to start. We heard about Vince McMahon's league that's going to start in 2 years. There's another one that's going to start next year. So I want to ask you about that when we come back. Sean and Sharply, Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharply and the Leprechaun Lunch winding down this Friday. Sweet 16 action coming up tonight. More March Madness from Westwood One. That starts at 7 o'clock after Budweiser's weekday sports beat. Leprechaun Lunch is brought to you by Lechleitner Door, by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, by Carmella's at McCree's, Edward Jones making sense of investing. Contact Ryan Hale in South Bend or Jerry Hunt, also in South Bend. Kurt Outdoor Living, and by Zolman's Tire and Auto Care. Along with former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharply, I'm Sean Steyers as we wind things down. Okay, Evan, I wanted to ask you about this. Vince McMahon recently announced that he's bringing the XFL back.
Roddy Piper
2 years.
Pizza.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's who could forget. But Charlie Ebersol, the son of former NBC sports executive Dick Ebersol, has announced that he plans to launch the Alliance of American Football League. Not a great name, but in any case... It's going to start in a year, a week after next year's Super Bowl. They're going to kick it off. And so some of the kind of bullet points on this, the season's going to run 10 weeks. They'll have eight teams of 50 players. Guys with NFL ties will be involved, like Bill Polian. He's going to help run the league. Troy Polamalu, Hines Ward, Justin Tuck, Jaron Allen are all going to be involved.
Those are some big names.
Yeah, I mean, really big names. And unlike the XFL, this league is going to have a game a week on CBS's cable channel. They'll also play the championship game on CBS. And there's also going to be fantasy sports integrated into it. So do you think this thing has a better chance than Vince McMahon's XFL?
With those names that you mentioned, absolutely. And, I mean, that's what we discussed with the XFL is if you're not going to be a gimmick like it was in the past, you've got to have, number one, you've got to have good football.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have backing from former players. And it looks like... That's the case right now. So I wonder if McMahon then will stay with the non-gimmicky style of football with the announcement of this, or if he just says, let's bring back the original XFL.
Pro wrestling on a football field.
Yeah.
And this doesn't necessarily have a direct tie to the NFL right now, but they're going to go after sort of bubble players, maybe guys who got cut from NFL training camps.
Yeah.
Those are going to be the bulk of this, whereas McMahon, if you had NFL experience, he didn't really want you around.
Right. And two, I mean, I think the timing for both of these, you know, both of these, the XFL and then this alliance here, with numbers down in the NFL right now, there's a reason why they're trying to go after and grab a part of this market. Whether or not it's going to work, I don't know.
I mean, football is still, regardless of when you hear declining ratings and all that stuff, football is still the most watched thing on television. It just over, and it, the Super Bowl had a dip in ratings, but it was still over 100 million people watching the Super Bowl and the playoffs and on and on and on. So they're trying to capitalize on that. It's the trouble you get into is this is still the JV squad, so to speak. So is there going to be real interest where you can make money? Now, they do also say they have a 7 to 10 year plan on this. So it's not an all or nothing within two or 3 years. So
be interesting to see how this works out. But they've got the names. You got, I mean, if you have guys like Polian and Polamalu and Justin Tuck, I mean, that's going to immediately turn heads.
Polian's going to help run the league. Polamalu and J.K. McKay, whose dad, the legendary John McKay from USC in Tampa Bay, they're going to oversee the player side. Tuck and Hines Ward are going to be advisors to the league. And they also have a pretty long list of investors that starts with Jared Allen, the former Kansas City Chief and Minnesota Viking. So it shall be interesting. All right, we're going to talk more football coming up tonight at 5 o'clock on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Notre Dame hoops as well when Tom Noy will talk that, Sweet 16 and more in the second hour tonight. And I'll give Tom your message about his tweet habits.
Tell him to figure it out.
Okay. Sounds good. For Evan Sherpley, I'm Sean Stiers. Leprechaun Lunch. We will talk to you next week right here on 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader.